Sorry, we're just in rehearsal.
Yeah.
Talking about breakfast cereals and the like.
Oatmeal and napalm and, you know, the usual topics.
Alan mentioned Farina, which Farina. I had not heard as a child. This is a subject we were talking about earlier in this week about, you know, food that we were fed as children.
No,
but
sure.
I was a Farina baby.
Yeah, I love Farina.
You have that with your Bosco in the morning.
But Farina has to be prepared correctly. Unlike oatmeal, it's hard to destroy oatmeal. But Farina, you got to do it exactly right. About 2 minutes and 25 seconds in the microwave, one cup of water, and three giant spoonsful of Farina.
Now, there's one that I'm missing. There's Farina.
What is Farina?
There's Farina.
Farina is cream of wheat.
Okay.
Yeah, there's cream of wheat.
It's not Purina.
Farina, and then there's what's the wheat one? What there was the brown raw. Do you know what I'm talking
about? Cream of wheat is all I
know.
I still live with my mother. I'm still eating the foods of my childhood.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Cream cheese and olive sandwich for lunch today.
Oh, delicious!
Aren't they great?
Oh, you are the best.
That's great.
How about cream cheese and jelly?
Oh, I love that.
Love that.
Yeah. Love that. Alan?
I think you were just talking about, you know, there's some hippie stuff that they make.
Not like that stuff. No,
what do you mean?
No, it's hippie, an old hippie, food. No, hippie I'm going back to, like, Depression era.
Yeah.
Cream of wheat.
It's cream of wheat.
Cream of wheat.
Which is also the same as Farina, I believe.
Well, they're similar.
I don't know. My Farina box says Farina and cream of wheat on it.
Oh, it has a... Okay. Yeah. And then there's another one that is, like, wheat... Not like wheat germ. Not wheat germ, but it's something else. I'll figure it out.
Yeah, let's do some research on this. Because
nothing happening in the world today. Important. Ukraine,
oh my God.
ISIS.
It is.
Minimum wage, none of that. No,
we're just having this discussion in we're just having this discussion in the newsroom, but there is a conspiracy theory that NPR is no longer using the term ISIS.
Really?
No, a lot of people are not.
What are they saying instead?
They say the Islamic State or the Islamic... are not using ISIS because of some verschlugene idea that ISIS is also the name of something good. I don't know.
A goddess. Almighty
Egyptian
ISIS.
Egyptian lore.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, I
that
doubt
makes
that...
sense.
You know, I think it's just that the names have been changing. You watch the news
outlets. To protect the innocent.
Well, they keep changing it.
Yeah.
The weirdo group itself has been...
Right.
The heading group itself has been changing its name.
I love the story. Let's start with this because this is kind of puts everything into some perspective, and it's what we were really talking about yesterday and we've been talking about for so long, and that is front page of the New York Times, in Valang in Estonia on Wednesday to defend vulnerable NATO nations from Russia for as long as necessary. President Obama has now committed the United States to three major projections of its power: a pivot to Asia, a more muscular presence in Europe, and a new battle against Islamic extremists that seem very likely to accelerate. American officials acknowledge that these three commitments are bound to upend Mr. Obama's plans for shrinking the Pentagon's budget before he leaves office in 2017. They also challenge a crucial doctrine of his first term, that a reliance on high technology and minimal use of light footprint of military forces can deter ambitious powers and counter terrorists. So we talk this morning about the Obama foreign policy and how we ultimately, looking at those three fronts of how this has worked, how we've gotten to this point, and how it takes shape for the remainder of his term.
Okay, so this has to be seen, I think, as a reaction to the supposed gaffe by Obama, which is that we don't have a strategy yet. So now you get this strategy. So, okay, here's our 4-point strategy, and we're going to follow it, and that's it. And then you have Biden coming out yesterday and saying, "We'll go to the gates of hell, you know, whatever it is, to chase these people down." So forcefulness is being employed. Whoever's sitting up there in the White House, scratching their head and trying to figure out how you do this.
And the president would never say that, right? That's why you have a vice president to say that kind of thing.
That's one of the rules. But the president was pretty forceful yesterday. I thought that he made it clear they weren't going to get away with it, which is what the American people want to hear. What the exact way of doing that is a little bit more escapist.
Ruth Marcus of the Washington Post came out with a column today that accuses Obama of having a herky-jerky foreign policy strategy. That's her term for his kind of erratic going at it forcefully and then pulling back. I think it's more complicated than that. I think that Obama's strategy of the light footprint and reliance on technology actually can work. However, he inherited a situation that put us deep in the hole in the Middle East. He could not pull out immediately. There's some worry that he pulled out even too soon as it was. But that left us in the deficit as far as money and public acceptance of us using force. So he's trying to adjust that. And I think that's the reason for what looks like kind of erratic behavior right now. But going forward, I think what he's doing is really sound. It's trying to figure out what we can accomplish and how it helps us.
I keep on thinking when we read about this, by the way, it was we, Tina. That I was
yeah, no, we, had, and we actually had like 50, several.
Yeah, several
we
emails.
We get more letters about this kind of thing than anything else.
So yeah. I just want to, you can stop writing. We know it. We Tina is a Mapo. That was maple oatmeal. Yeah, that's not it.
That's no good.
No, We Tina was what I was thinking of. Not hippie, by the way. Okay, so, but we were talking about this of, and Alan, you've made this point, and it stuck with me, and I keep on asking the question. It's like one of those things that has been put in my brain that whenever I hear somebody complain about the president, I can hear somebody complain about the administration and the action taken, which is always, I hear your voice say, okay, but what would you do?
Yeah, sure.
And I think that's really one of these situations where, okay, you can certainly point a finger, you can certainly yell and scream, but what is the right answer? And I think, aren't we at a, I mean, we've been at this point for a while, it seems, over the last year at least, that we really don't know what the right answer
well,
is.
Well, yes, but you can't say that. You can't say, I don't know what to do.
Well, no.
Because they say, listen, I go to a doctor. Why do I go to a doctor? Because the doctor's going to know how to deal with whatever I got. You know, that's why.
But you were saying that he doesn't have a strategy.
Oh, Obama said, we don't have a strategy yet. Yeah, he took Obama so much flack from that, from the media, which thinks, as we have just said, that's not what the public wants. They want a forceful, in-charge president.
And they got
these,
it yesterday.
These are, yeah, and he gave that. And I think that's more false than what we have seen up to now, which is he is trying to steer us into a different path. And that is going to be jerky for a while.
Well, no, but when you say, look, they beheaded somebody, two good men, and they took their heads off, the American people are furious about it. And you say, quite mm-hmm. correctly, we're going to reach out, and as Biden says, we're going to follow them to the gates of hell. That's where they're going. That's what the American people want to hear. Mm-hmm. Then you're off the hook in terms of developing your strategy. If you say that the intellectuals, like yourself, Rosemary, and I mean that in the best way,
if there wasn't, do I feel punished
by that? Wasn't, if there wasn't a shot
yeah,
there,
had the second part, maybe you could have taken it at face value.
That was
but,
not a shot.
Okay.
The intellectuals, such as yourself, are saying, yes, that was very honest of you. You told us you don't have this. You've been sitting around with your foreign policy advisors. One says this, one says that, but you can't come up with the definitive thing. That doesn't mean you don't know how to assure the American people that we are going to get these bums.
So you're separating the communication skills from the strategy formation.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I buy that.
Well, they've twice delayed this national security strategy of the U.S., the
right.
second one.
Right.
And so, obviously, things on the ground in various places have forced them to call it to a halt. The thing I find interesting was that the plan has been to this pivot to Asia mm-hmm. is to have 60% of all the U.S. forces out there in the world in Asia. So what does this tell us about what we perceive as the big looming threat?
Yeah, and what we perceive
China.
As the most, in, well, yes, and the
Obama's
most.
Obama's been very open about that from the beginning.
Well,
it's
yes,
always.
Yes, it is. It's fascinating. You interview the guys, the congressman, and you say, why do we need another multi-billion-dollar submarine? And the answer always is China. The Chinese are doing it. There's always got to be a boogeyman.
Well, there's some looking far ahead to stuff that the American people have to do, and we're not good at that. We can see that there's a threat when you're beheading Americans in the deserts of Syria. But those little rocks that China and Japan are fighting about, I mean, really, what's at stake there are fishing rights, shipping rights, trading rights. It's territorial control. There's fighting going on the Arctic Circle, which is melting. That means you can go through it. And we need to be in that. And so Obama's not wrong about this. It's forward thinking, though, and it's harder support. Let's do this in the future when we know we have a crisis right here.
Well, you know, I take some issue with that, respectfully. And that is that...
you may lose your intellectual cred.
No, I take some issue with that. I think that there are two governments in this country. There is the government in Washington who are bought and paid for by the other government, which are the economic interests. And I see this as the as a fight of economies. And I think that that's what's going on here. In the same way that I think that there is this other thing happening with the Pentagon and why we need all of these tools of war to keep our economy going. And those are things that really are a bit removed from the day-to-day problem of beheadings and other and rocks outside of China and Japan.
I don't disagree with that at all, Alan. Yeah. That's true.
And that's the stuff we don't know.
Yeah.
So the line in this article, which we've touched on, but I just want to ask you directly, so that the question being how forcefully is President Obama committed to reversing the suspicion from Europe to the Middle East to Asia that the United States is in an era of retrenchment?
I think he still wants the Pacific Rim focus, and I think he's moving towards it, but he's been vastly slowed by crises in the Middle East and in Eastern Europe.
Well, the Middle East ain't going away. As we have said since Ivanhoe and King Richard and all the rest, this is nothing new. We know this is going to be with us forever, if not between Israel and the Arabs, between the intra Arab murals and the killings that are going to happen. So he's got that on his plate no matter what happens. Right.
Yeah, he does. And there are other steps that he's taken and that other presidents have, too. Moving away from Middle Eastern oil is one thing. We now get most of our oil from other places.
It goes right back to what I just said.
Exactly,
if we don't have to worry about the oil, right, how will our politics change?
Exactly. And there's also there are other concerns, too. Latin America ought to be on our plate. Brazil is an enormous power, the same as China. There's how about global warming? That's a huge foreign policy concern as well. But Obama, I think, has so little room to maneuver because of the Bush administration that preceded him. We are in debt. We are sick of wars. There's an isolationist strain, again, in the United States. That's a huge thing to deal with. He is, at the very least, taking the first steps subsequent presidents are going to have to follow
The post-Wilsonian Republican presidents when everybody's sick of all of it.
Yeah.
And we got these characters, three of them in a row.
And the fact that Congress is not working with him but actively against him does not help any of this. This is something that should be engrossing all of our policy leaders.
What do you make of this foreign policy trip? What do you think, when he returns, what's the best case scenario for some sort of action taken?
You're talking about NATO now.
Yeah.
He definitely has to do something forceful. You know, I've been so much a hawk here, I've surprised myself that we have to.
And some of our listeners, I may say.
I know, but I mean, to me, this is what NATO is all about. We have heard that maybe there are some other steps, better arming or better training for the Ukraine independence.
But it's not a NATO nation, though.
I think that is just like such a technicality, because it would be, it wanted to be,
and promises were made
of Western powers,
and promises were made by Western governments to the Ukrainians.
Right, and the Baltic states know this. I mean, the ones who are NATO members, they know perfectly well that now it appears Ukraine, if we don't do anything, was thrown under the bus. Are we really going to say,
well,
they're not important NATO members?
No, without question. That without question. Yeah. And he made that point yesterday. Mm-hmm. And he said there are no second-class citizens. But Ray's right. They are not. So it's under the radar. And I wish I could believe one thing that Putin says. But I can't. You know, he just keeps making it up as he goes along.
Well, and that was, again, another shrewd little move. You say, okay, here's my plan.
I thought
knowing
it up on,
it wouldn't
and
be
he
accepted.
Said, and I thought it up on the plane.
Yeah,
going,
I wrote it on my like the back
the
of an envelope,
address,
right?
Yeah.
So how much of that is, again, shoot from the hip, and how much of that is...
psychotic?
Well, but planned. I mean, do you think that there is some, like, follow-through, that it's not just off the top of his head?
Oh, you mean
actually,
Obama?
No, under Putin.
No, I think Putin's worldview is to keep everybody hopping on one foot. And the way that he's going to do that is keep changing the rules. One day he'll say, get out of, to his people, we don't want any Russian forces, or there are no Russian forces, or there shouldn't be any. And then the next day they go marching in.
I think there is something to his wanting to be in charge no matter what. I go back to Syria when the United States appeared on the verge of airstrikes. And Putin goes, wait, I have an idea. We'll get all the chemical weapons out of there. I'll help you broker the deal. And that actually came to pass.
Well, wasn't that just him protecting a port, a friendly port for his
could be
country?
sure it is. It's could, he acts always in the self-interest of
could
Russia
be.
And so
himself.
What's the end game here for him? I assume he has an ultimate plan, and I assume it's control of that oil pipeline. I think that's the whole bottom line. Yep. In Ukraine.
I think he wants to destabilize and keep Ukraine destabilized.
I think he wants to play to his people and to appear to be a strong leader and to invoke their nationalism and their national instincts. And I think he's been very good at that.
Yeah.
We'll talk about many other issues when we return. We'll also welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Rosemary Romeo, I'm Joe Donahue. We will return after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel discussion this morning. It is very nice to have you with us. We welcome you to join us and to write us a note. Give us your thoughts. Share your thoughts with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. That isn't the only way you can communicate. You can also comment on our webpage. You can go to our Facebook page. You can tweet at WAMC Roundtable. But we love to hear from you on email, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we have several comments about our discussion regarding foreign policy and Russia specifically.
Yep. Paul from Amherst says, you know how we love Amherst, we do. Alan said, quote, give me one thing that Putin has said that we can believe. One thing Putin has said that is true is it all started when the USA engineered the overthrow of the Ukrainian government and installed the current pro-Western, pro-NATO, anti-Russian government. It is a matter of public record. Russia reasonably feared the seizure of Crimea by NATO. Are we just reading, or does anybody want to react to that? Yeah, we'll just read them. Okay. Even if we disagree. Luca, dear Roundtable, your conversation has a sense of continuing status quo. How will Obama's options be shifted post the November election, regardless of the outcome? Thank you, Luca in Woodstock.
Well, can we respond to that one?
Sure, of course.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think we've had elections in between over the past 6 years, and there seems to be a fairly steady course in the president's foreign policy. I don't know that it's going to change drastically after the election. Do you?
I don't think it has to.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be consumed by domestic economic issues after the election. We have more
that they're
debt
putting on hold before
coming.
The election.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Well, it could be. And let's see here. Walker says, Rosemary is right. The president is willing to take the criticism about the pace of decision-making in order to arrive at a sound policy, which he had said, we don't have a policy yet bold letters. But like all complex things, we need to consider context and nuance before we pipe in with our relative naivete. Let's read and listen and to talk about what the objective foreign policy thinkers say. In other words, the Atlantic Peter Bernard, David Ignatius of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution, rather than the usual sour grape criticism of McCain and Lizzie Graham, at least we'll learn something. Loved hearing what the Ukraine reporter had to say this week. What a gift to listeners, Rosemary. I think that's correct. And Charles and Mary, Kay and Charles say, I want to refer to Friedman's opinion piece in Sunday's Times, Aim Ready Fire, not fire ready aim. I don't always agree with Friedman, but thought his point of view was informative here, and that's from Kay. And then because people keep sending me stuff I don't want that's in between.
You see the one from Ryan?
Yeah, here's Ryan. To me, the answer to the riddle in the Middle East lies in what not to do. The president needs to decide what not to do, which will leave him with whatever options are left. So, for example, he can safely say no nukes, no going alone, no negotiating, etc., which leaves us where we are now. He's really doing everything that a viable that's viable besides boots on the ground. And we've heard from Jim, who says, I'm afraid combating ISIS will become a mostly American effort. American boots on the ground could soon follow increased and expanded airstrikes, while most of our allies, except Great Britain, will sit back, hold our jackets, and watch us do the fighting. I'm so long if I can read on that. It's a little too long.
A couple of paragraphs too long.
Yeah. It just a couple. And then Bowie says, Alan, do you mean granola when you say the hippie food? And also, do you know by microwaving your farina, you're destroying all its nutritional value? Please don't microwave your breakfast. We want you on the air for many years to come. Well, you know, he sort of softened the blow. Marty says, Wikipedia, farina is a generic name for usually semolina cereal food. Farina, cream of wheat, and malt to meal are brand names for the product. That's from Marty.
I think you should do a whole show on cereal.
Yeah, yeah. And then Christina says...
I'll have to host it. Right. That's great. Thank you. Thanks for that, Rosemary.
From Retina for Joe D, I loved it as a little girl. And then Catherine said cream of rice.
Cream of rice is not a bad alternative.
I don't remember cream.
Cream of rice. Cream of rice is not bad.
Is that a hippie food as well?
Yeah.
No. I don't know.
Hippie food is only if you smoke it, I think.
And then Kay says, don't forget Wetina and Maypole. And Allison says, you can't get it in any store around here but Stop and Shop. It's not hippie. It's called Wetina. It's not hippie. It's old. It's not cream of wheat. It has fiber.
Yes.
And I guess that seems to be it. Okay.
Yes. Wetina actually, it tasted good for you, while cream of wheat could pass as something.
You got to put a lot of sugar and milk and...
heavy cream and butter.
Dark chocolate and...
All right. Well, thank you very much for your letters. We love them. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So you're mayor of the city of New York. You leave office. Oh, what are you going to do?
Oh, boy.
Continue being a billionaire is what you do.
I love this story.
Maybe you should reassume the leadership of the business empire that you built only 8 months after ending your final term as mayor of the city of
New York.
Which
you said you weren't going to do.
Why is this a story?
Because he said he wasn't going to do it.
Who cares? It's his business. Let him do it.
Well, I couldn't agree more. But he changed his mind. The interesting thing is that the guy he put in, his deputy, who had been his deputy in City Hall 2, turns out to have done very well with the business.
Doubled it almost in that time.
Mm-hmm. And the guy had the grace or something else to...
Also the money.
No, to just step aside. To step aside, yeah. And they were very nice to each other, you know, on the way out the door. And he said, I'm not going to do this. It's not what I signed on for. Good for him.
Yeah, he's got a platinum parachute, no doubt.
In other words, good for both of them.
Well, you know, I'm sort of sad about it because Bloomberg was an extraordinary businessman, was a mayor whose methods will be looked at for years to come, but certainly out of the box. And I was actually looking forward to the next step. I heard him speak at Williams College at graduation. Right. And I was looking forward to the next step, which was supposed to be philanthropy and just gun control, working on gun control. And now, is that lost?
Why is it mutually exclusive?
Well, it may be that he has enough energy and time and money to do all of that.
Trump is always trumpeting something or other and running his business.
Please don't compare the two.
What I'm saying is a businessman who also acts on issues that he perceives as important. So I guess
he just liked this. That seems to be it. He was going to go in and spend a few hours a week.
It's what made him what he is. Yeah. I mean, he's a brilliant mind. He does great stuff. I've been a big fan of his for a long time, and I just think it's fair to say, okay, you know, this appeals to me. I want to do it.
I thought the way that the article described it seemed like you can understand how it happened, where he said I would spend a few hours a week at the
office.
And
then it was a few more.
And then it was a few more, and then he was there every day, and then 2 hours turned to 4 hours, turned to 6 hours, and then like,
and
okay,
his deputy
I'm gonna take
goes, okay, this isn't a job I've had for 6 years, because he's answering to the big guy, to the founder. Yeah.
Well, that's right. You know, I mean, sometimes You know, things like the Legislative Gazette newspaper, not on the same thing. You know, I've considered that to be my baby. Mm-hmm. It's hard to let go. Keep it alive.
The organization I work with, the founder is a visionary. I think he's a genius, but he's built something so large now that he can't keep it all in his head. And yet he knows he has to divest to give out sure. jobs. And it's very hard to do. You want to keep it. It's your baby.
We're going to take a break. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. We will get to other issues in just a moment. But again, we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support comes from Bascom Lodge, a historic 1930s arts and crafts lodge atop Mount Greylock in the Berkshires, offering overnight accommodations, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 7 days through October 19th. BascomLodge.net. And Dorset Theater Festival, presenting Ron Crawford's one-man show, Travels with Mark Twain, from September 18th through the 20th. DorsetTheaterFestival.org.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Rosemary Romeo, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Attorney General Eric Holder this week will launch a broad civil rights investigation into the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department, according to two federal law enforcement officials. The investigation, which is expected to be announced perhaps today, this afternoon, will be conducted by the Justice Department Civil Rights Division and follow a process similar to that used to investigate complaints of profiling and the use of excessive force in other police departments across the country, according to those officials. The move follows the shooting last month of Michael Brown, an 18-year-old African-American, by a white Ferguson police officer who claimed he acted in self-defense. Brown, who was unarmed, was shot at least six times on the afternoon of August 9th.
Twice in the head.
Yes. So, Holder's decision will represent the Obama administration's most aggressive step to address the Ferguson shooting, which set off days of often violent clashes between police and demonstrators in the streets of the St. Louis suburb. It seems, to me at least, that from the very beginning, there had to be an investigation, right? I mean, we had to look into what happened.
Absolutely so.
Lots of implications in Ferguson, and this is important, and I don't know that we can debate this.
It takes a little bit of looking because, I mean, it's a national issue. It is not a Ferguson issue.
Sure.
The question is, the cops are doing a terrifically demanding job. The question is, when does it go too far? Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to do this because we send them out there to confront the toughest elements in our areas. And in cases, and I think we can say that there are more than a few, they overreact. And then the question is, the sociological question is, do the people who had the middle class side and say, okay, yeah, it was a mistake, too bad, you shot somebody, and defend the police almost all the time, and grand juries refusing to indict, and people saying, no, we're not going to do this, or is it something else? I think cops have a terribly difficult job. On the other hand, I think there's a question of when is it too much?
And this was a racial incident. It was black citizens against mostly white or all white.
Almost. And it often is.
Yeah, but it isn't the only incidents. We saw it in the Occupy Wall Street movements where police were meeting peaceful demonstrators, holding signs and cooking rice in a park, and they're in the full battle gear stuff. So this has been going on, and it's part of the 911 consciousness where we are ready, and indeed we, I think, want our police to be ready to deal with the worst forces that come after us. But they're using those methods and that equipment increasingly against we, the people, who have a First Amendment right to protest and address grievances.
Yeah, yeah. But in all respect, and to you, Rosemary, I think you're right. The Wall Street thing, the Occupy thing, may have been a little crazy. Here in Albany, it was crazy. The DA,
ridiculous.
The DA said, "Look, I'm not going to prosecute those people to the
voice
governor."
Of reason, finally.
It was a very gutsy move on the DA's part.
I thought so.
Here, but and I know you want to say something here, Ray. But I think there's a difference between the inherited racism that exists in this country. The difference between blacks and whites, and projecting myself into any person of color with a kid saying, having that quote conversation about going out onto the street and how you talk to police officers and, you know, how you have really second class citizenship in so many ways. Mm-hmm. That's really where this conflict goes. Ray, you were going to say something?
Well, I think from a practical standpoint, if this case, in other words, the St. Louis County grand jury is hearing evidence on Officer Darren Wilson now and whether he committed a crime. So the only thing that, if I was a defense attorney for him and if this goes to trial, I
whether
would say
he violated civil rights, we should say.
Right.
Yes.
But if that goes to trial, I'm a defense attorney and say he gets convicted. I say the federal government's highly publicized investigation into led to prejudice. And so I think it makes it tougher to do that. And again, we don't know if he will be brought up on charges by the grand jury.
So the Washington Post reported Saturday that five current and one former member of the Ferguson police force faces pending federal lawsuits claiming they used excessive force. The lawsuits, as well as more than half dozen internal investigations, include claims that individual officers separately hogtied a 12-year-old boy who was checking his family mailbox, pistol-whipped children, and used a stun gun on a mentally ill man who died as a result.
Yeah, excessive force, it seems to me, the issue, although I can't deny that racism is something that should be looked at, too. I just have the feeling, we don't really know because we've not heard his side yet, but that officer seemed to be, quote, following procedure. And I wonder if Michael Brown had been a large white teenager, probably mouthy, whatever, would the same thing have happened? It might not have, but I don't know. I think that's something that the federal government should be looking at.
Right.
I also worry about criminal charges in this case. If you remember the Trayvon Martin case, criminal charges were brought. The police were vilified in that case for not bringing charges. And then, of course, there's an acquittal. If you looked at it, there was no way there could have been anything other than acquittal. While it was a horrible incident, I hate calling a murder an incident, but a horrible death, the law was set up so that the police did operate correctly. They did do the right thing. It's the law. It's the lawmakers we should have gone after. And I think that flamed really bad feelings in Florida.
34 police departments in this country are under investigation for alleged civil rights violations.
Wow.
And that's why we have, that's why it's great to have two levels of government. Because, you know, when you get into the state politics and who appoints the judges and, you know, what, it's better to have something out there that can take a different kind of objective look at this.
Mm-hmm.
We welcome your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us turn and go to a much different subject, and that is a study on salt. Try to follow this one, if you will. For years, we have known that diets high in salt can be bad for people with high blood pressure. A study published recently in the New England Journal of Medicine confirmed this fact. It monitored more than 100,000 people in 18 countries and found that people who consumed more sodium generally had significantly higher blood pressure than those who did not. Another manuscript in the same journal, looking at the same study population, went even further. It found that people who consumed more than 7 grams of sodium per day had a significantly higher chance of death than people who ate 3 to 6 grams per day. People consuming high levels of sodium had higher rates of heart attacks, heart failures, and strokes as well.
But
then if you don't eat
enough
salt, that also
your risk goes up.
Does harm, and very similar harm than was just
that's right
listed and discussed. So the upshot of the article is that
got to stay in the middle.
It's the extreme
moderation.
It's the extremes that are the extremes are the enemy is what the headline says.
Well, I have a couple of observations.
Okay.
Number one, much of what we buy has salt in it. There's plenty of salt in certainly in processed foods, which we know from many guests here we should do.
Wow.
Yeah.
And cereal.
Yeah.
So I don't know about wheat, Tina, but
yeah. No, well, and in fact, I may be some. I mean, I went to the doctor years and years ago to Harry Odubashian, a terrific cardiologist around here. I said my blood pressure's up, and he said stop eating salt. Or he didn't say stop eating salt. He said eat less salt, moderate your salt intake. Boom, the numbers came right down. So there is something to be said about eating. But then again, I think I may be erring on the low side of things.
Let's go get him some French fries.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you put a little salt in that breakfast cereal. It's going to taste a lot better. But I don't do it. And, I'm never quite
it's
used to
it's amazing how good salt tastes. You know that?
God, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm with you on that.
It's amazing. I agree with you, although to Alan's point about the processed foods, I mean, the other day I forget even what I was eating, but I thought to myself, I guess I was out eating, and I was like, this is, like, disgustingly salty. I mean, it's to the point where you think, wow, this has really become something that we've put into our diet, and I didn't even think I would be as attuned to it.
Yeah.
That I was, but
this is
I
like
do
Goldilocks.
Think we grow over.
That's too much salt. That's too little salt. This one is just right.
But I think when you notice it and you feel like you're... Go ahead.
All right. We have a couple of letters.
Excellent.
Did
let's
you want
get to...
Them?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Let's see. We heard from Tom. You don't shoot to death an unarmed, mouthy kid. What law allows that action by anyone, let alone cops? And Gary says,
totally agreed.
Many people believe the problem in Ukraine isn't about democracy.
I would have done it myself if it were not illegal.
Many people believe the problem in Ukraine isn't about democracy or nationalism, but rather it's all about control of the oil pipelines that deliver the oil to Northern Europe. If Russia, Putin can't get the Russian oil through the Ukraine via these pipelines, then Northern Europe will be forced to buy its fossil fuels from the U.S. oil companies. It is, in fact, so important to the Western world that Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, was recently named to the board of the Ukraine National Oil Company, which controls these pipelines. And that's from regards from Gary. And then Erica says, I strongly believe that Ukrainian people should have the right to decide their own future when it comes to joining the EU or not. That said, at the time of reunification of East and West Germany, the West promised the USSR, yes, it was a promise to the USSR, not today's Russia, that NATO would move no further east, not an inch. Can't Russia's current objection to an EU state on its eastern border give EU-NATO closeness be considered similar to our objecting to Soviet missiles being placed in Cuba in the 60s, which is the cause of our objection, never happened, not only because of our objection, but because we traded with them about Turkey and the rest of it. Yeah, sure. And Ryan says, do you think the Republican obfuscation of Obama has embodied Putin? And like that,
we are done, but we welcome your letters, and we would love to hear what you have to say on a wide range of issues that we've discussed this morning.
Roundtable@WAMC.
All go online. Go to the website. You can go to Facebook. You can go to Twitter and to our comment page, all that good stuff. Many, many ways to get in touch with us. We don't play hard to get. We welcome you. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Rosemary, Raymond, and Alan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will talk. I think this group will convene tomorrow morning at the 23 hours from now. We will talk to you then. Thank you.